Mixing with the legends, only on Mix.
Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, then listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Styles every Tuesday night at 7:15.
It's Tuesday evening. Chris and Suzanne Styles with you for an hour on Mix 93.8 FM. Now, tonight we're going to be chatting about It's All About Women.
Indeed, a most fascinating show lined up for you. And as we reflect on last week when we had procurement experts, Hank and Debbie Von Laar of the PSA Group in studio live with us, and what a fascinating conversation that was.
Well, especially I think around the fact that there's value in understanding how you buy stuff for small business.
Absolutely, and also just the challenges that you face being a couple in business. How refreshing it is to, or it was rather, to have a couple in studio with us who are actually creating a success of their business and a success of their marriage, and whose business life isn't busy cannibalizing the marriage life.
For sure. Now tonight, if you have any questions in connection with what is it that women want and why don't they go out and get it? Why do we always feel guilty? Why do we feel that we have to put everybody else before ourselves? And it's really something to think about tonight. So you can send us an SMS on 41348. SMSs are charged at R1.50. Or you can send us a tweet on @mix938fm.
In fact, I do like that. Tonight's show is all about women. And as such, we would certainly appreciate questions, contributions. And let's really dig into it. Let's dig into why women create success, why they don't create success, and what can actually be done to help them to create more success. Because it certainly isn't a one-size-fits-all. It's a success recipe is never perfect for every single person. There are nuances and there are changes that need to be made in order to make it personal and unique to you. But I'd really love it if tonight we'd get some fantastic interactions from you around your thoughts as to what it is that women need to be doing more of in order to create more success. Now, as is customary on the show, we begin with our half echo cards, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, and I'm going to hand over to our wonderful producer, Kudzai, to read his card up first.
Good evening. My card says, work on you, and you are the root of your financial success or failure. If you work on the roots, the fruits will take care of themselves.
Well, I really do like that, work on you. And I guess it begs the question, how much work are you actually doing on yourself? And the other thing is, do you sustain that work? How often haven't you maybe started something and not actually seen it through to the end? And is this maybe something that you need to be sitting there thinking about for a second? Because as we well know, the way you do anything tends to be the way you do everything, or actual fact is the way you do everything. So are there things that you're quitting on right now that just mirror what you're quitting on in other areas of your life?
Or are you experiencing severe frustration because you're giving up on things because you're putting other people first? And that's such a big one. Now, my card tonight is get paid for results, not time. And that's such an important one. Wealth rule number one, no limits on your income. Rich people choose to get paid based on results. Poor people choose to get paid based on time, which is limited. Rich people believe in their value and their ability to deliver it. Poor people live in fear and need guarantees. Get paid for results, not time.
Very, very profound, huh? I have a fascinating card here. It says, focus on contribution. And the back of the card, the reverse side reads, your life isn't just about you. If you want to be rich in the truest sense of the word, you must contribute to other people's lives. Now, what a fascinating card, and especially given the fact that tonight we're going to be talking about women. We're going to be talking about the way women think, feel, act, interpret success. And I'm sitting here scratching my head, Suze, because It says, you know, your life isn't just about you. If you want to be rich in the truest sense of the word, you must contribute to other people's lives. Well, yes, very true. The flip side of this is the fact that a lot of women who you and I have interacted with of late have actually got to the point where they have got so much of their life, their time, their energy, their focus on everybody else that they've forgotten about themselves.
For sure, and there's a big difference between, you know, it's always my definition of being selfish and being self-centered. If you are going to give to others, you have got to make sure that your well is full. You've got to make sure that you've got reserves, both financial, both emotionally, and within your health. So you've got to be healthy, you've got to be wealthy, and you've got to be pretty solidly happy upstairs.
And balanced.
And of course, everybody's definition of balanced is different. But it is so essential, because what we are finding with women is that once we take on the role of partner or wife, we then take on the role of being mother. Then we take on the role of being homemaker, carer, provider, everything else. And eventually, what is left for us? And then we find out that we've got no idea what we want, or we're extremely resentful because we're not working on anything that we want for ourselves. And then people wonder why women are angry.
Well, we've actually just had a lovely tweet come in from Shocky _ Shocks. What an interesting Twitter handle. And the tweet says, "This is interesting. Thank you very much." Yes, it is. We've actually just been doing some work recently with a couple who are involved in business. And about, 17, 18 years ago, the woman basically put her dreams on hold, put her career on hold, put her desires on the back burner, put everything that she wanted into a deep cryogenic state. And I'm really not overemphasizing it when I say cryogenic state, because she literally put everything about her on ice in order to support her husband. And her husband was fulfilling his dream, and has to a large degree fulfilled his dream, and is now beginning to build a new dream. And after 17, 18 years, now the absolute shock and horror in her world is, well, where do I fit in? And what is interesting is how this level of support that she has given over the years has now suddenly turned to extreme anger and resentment. And really, in the big picture of things, has her husband truly done anything wrong? No. He was just doing what he loved. She made the decision to put everything about her, her life, her dreams, her ambitions, her goals, her aspirations on ice in order to support him. And now, close on 20 years down the line, now this is all turning to anger. And it really does bring into perspective, I believe, that that old adage that there's a fine line between love and hate. And this is the thing, you know, while any relationship thrives under both support and resistance, you've got to have both. Too much resistance and you just want to eventually get out of that person's life because it's just too painful, and too much support, well, the other person just becomes a doormat that you wipe your feet on, and ultimately there is a loss of respect, and that's just how it is. The biggest thing is support and resistance is great, but yes, it is absolutely fascinating, and it's so important to actually know what it is that you want. And yes, it's fine to dedicate time, effort, and energy and love into others. Not for one second are we saying that that's the wrong thing to do. But what about yourself? Because if you forget about yourself in the process, and while you're so busy looking after everyone else, well, suddenly you look at yourself in the mirror, you don't even know who you are. And I believe that moments like that are when the universe, and given the fact that it's energy, I would actually go as far as to say it's universal energy forcing you and your energy to restore some form of balance.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, I've really just thought about, we've had some amazing speeches recently come to the fore via YouTube and other video channels around graduation addresses. We had the amazing address by Jim Carrey to the Maharishi University of Management. And yesterday evening, I actually listened to one by Tim Minchin, who was giving an address to a university in Western Australia. And Tim Minchin, like Jim Carrey, is really comedic in background. Yet they are very insightful and aware people. Same with Russell Brand. Surprisingly enough, because we see them on television and think that they're really quite amusing. But when you think about it, they talk about happiness. They talk about life. And some very profound things. Jim Carrey's one particularly profound by saying that life shouldn't happen to you. Life should happen for you. Mm. And so many women reaching their early 40s are suddenly realizing that life just happened around them and nothing happened for them.
Well, actually, if I may, I'd like to interject there. And Suze, you've actually been there. You made decisions that actually resulted in a large chunk of your life actually being spent and led in a way whereby you were actually doing what you believed everyone else wanted done, as opposed to what you actually wanted to do. I know it's been one of the very, very big and brutal lessons that you have had to learn, not only as a businesswoman, but also as a mom. And I think now is a real opportune moment, given the fact that we're talking about women and given the fact that we're actually going to play all in tonight and really tell it the way it is, for you to begin to share quite a lot of your story around why you feel so strongly about this, why it is so important for women to actually know who they are and what they want. And as a result of that, you've also taken this desire and these years of experience of yours and actually rolled them into a very interesting program, which you actually created and asked me to support you on, which I've done so with a great amount of enthusiasm and love. But I think let's actually get real in this show and you begin to tell it as it is, because there's nothing like hearing it from someone who actually in many parts of their life just gave everything of themselves away in order to play nice in the sandpit.
Well, you know, it's really quite interesting, because you don't believe, you kind of don't believe that it's anything special when the experience is something that you're going through yourself. It's something that life throws at you, you're presented with it, and in life you always have a choice. If you don't make a choice, you've still made a choice. I mean, people who we coach and companies who turn around and say to us, you know, that I didn't have a choice. Yes, you did. And as a little girl, I was presented with my half-brother literally to look after shortly before my 7th birthday. And it was a case of, here's this little creature. I mean, you know, what do you know when you're only 8 in terms of looking after a baby? And, you know, I needed to help to look after him, was the kind of intimation.
Well, if I may go so far as to say, I think today people would just be absolutely shocked and horrified at a 7 or 8-year-old having to step in and literally become an adult, because that's what you had to do. When you have a young life entrusted to your care, that's it. Your childhood is gone.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, it's something that I didn't realize until my mid-40s or early 40s, that there's something, it's just, you know, that was it. My childhood was over in those terms. And because of the our financial background as a family living in the UK during the original recession of the 70s in a 3-day week where industry allowed people to keep their jobs, but you had to share them. So if you're in manufacturing, that was a 6-day-a-week job, 2 men would share it 3 days each. So, you know, times were really tough. Money wasn't good. And from that perspective, I know that my mum did take a second job, but my mum and my stepdad were party people. They liked to be out when they weren't working. They liked to be out down the club. They liked to be drinking. They liked to be socializing with their friends. So everything was really left to me to start running a household, to start doing things like cooking and cleaning and washing and ironing.
As a little girl, what went through your mind? What was going on inside of your head when you looked all around you and you saw money for cigarettes, money for booze, money for partying, and you were having to do whatever it takes in order to keep the pot boiling in order to make ends meet, in order to look after your brother. What on earth was going through your mind? Can you actually think that far back?
I can't really, because my sort of real memories, I'd just locked away for such a long time. But the thing that I found so interesting was last year going on MMI, Harvicker's MMI, one of the exercises that Doug gave us actually takes you back to your first interaction with money, the emotionally significant event around money, and then how has that impacted on me for the rest of my life. And I think the absolutely stunning thing was that first memory was around coming home from school at 8, going to the fridge looking to make something for tea, as we used to call it then, not dinner or supper, and finding no food in there, going up to my mother and asking her for money so that I could go to the shops. Now think about that, 8 years old, so that I could go to the shops. And my mother's words to me, she was busy getting ready to go out, and my mother's words to me was, "There's no money for you, you don't deserve any." Now, think of the emotional impact of that on a child that is hungry, that has got to feed their little brother, and just wants some money to go and get a loaf of bread and a tin of beans, because it would have been beans on toast. That would have been what I was capable of sorting out for myself at the time. I hadn't learned to cook then. It only took a year, and I was cooking. And that was what made me decide to... We lived very close to what would be known as corner shops. And I struck up a deal with the boys that used to deliver the newspapers, where I would get their newspapers in the morning and write the addresses on the top where they had to deliver them, which meant that they could sleep for a half an hour later. And I could have some money so that I always knew that there was money, and I used to hide it away.
So let me just be clear. What you're saying is that you started coordinating. I think that's the right choice of word. You started coordinating newspaper rounds for boys. They obviously went out and delivered the newspapers. You were how old, 10?
No, I was only just over 8.
Just over 8. And the driving force behind this was not to have fun or to have pocket money. This was actually so that you knew there was always some money stashed away somewhere so you could eat. Is that right?
I always used to stash cash. So if I think about that, you know, just from... Just my that was my childhood. Within a year and a half, I'd started looking after the family home, which used to, I mean, talk about a little Cinderella moment. But doing the tidying up, doing everything, looking after my half brother, trying to go to school, trying to think about things like doing my homework on time, also trying to do as many activities as I could so that I didn't have to get home too early, so that I could actually just be out of the environment. And we moved from town to town, city to city, place to place. And this was my life. Every time we got somewhere, I had to find somewhere where I could make money. So at the age of 11, I was the great height of 5'3¼", which made me rather tall for my age. And I looked around 15 because I was quite well developed, and got my first job in what would be the equivalent of one of the Chinese shops, handbags, shoes, decor, but things where you didn't get everything twice. You couldn't order a pair of trousers. They weren't going to get the same stock. We used to call them market shops. And I used to work in market shops after school to earn money, just to always make sure that I could clothe myself, that there was money for stuff that my brother needed, and this was my mother's lifestyle.
So now, given that this is an absolutely abnormal existence, at least in my model of the world it is, what type of emotions and thoughts were going through your head, or even going through your body for that matter, towards your brother? Because... it only makes sense that, you know, since he'd come into your world and you had to care for him, suddenly there was great upheaval in your world. There was a hell of a lot more responsibility. I mean, the only thing that I can presume is that there must have been quite a lot of resentment.
Not when I was small, no. I think really that at the time, you know, what choice did he have? I mean, so the resentment never would have, well, you know, when I was young, was never towards him as a person because he was little. He was 7 years younger than me. He didn't have any choices. He didn't sort of tug on my skirt and say, "Oi, it's your turn. You've got to look after me." This was an adult that did this. So it was a very, very trying time for me because my mum had quite a temper and extremely unkind with words. Never physically abusive. I think I probably got 2 smacks in my whole life, but she had a very big pair of hands, so I didn't need to experience them more than once or twice. But she could be quite cruel. And for me, it really was round about the time where I just had to, everything was pushed down. Anything I felt, anything I wanted, anything that was offered to me that I was told I couldn't have or anything that I knew I wouldn't be able to have was just pushed down. It was just repressed. It was just shoved down to my toes. And I experienced the most unbelievable calm, which is not a good thing. You have to be able to express your disappointments, your anger.
Is it that you felt calm or is it that something inside of you just went dead and numb?
No, it was just calm because I just knew I always was aware of those feelings, but I had to have everything absolutely under control because surprisingly we had a tremendous amount of humor in our home. So even though there was this very, very unconventional, strange childhood, there was a massive amount of humor in the home. It was just that my mum and my stepdad just abdicated their adult responsibilities. And if it was questioned, there could be bad temperaments and you could feel, you know, pretty shocked and pretty affected by it because, as I say, you know, words are pretty mean, let me tell you. But if
I think words do sometimes so much more damage than just a good old solid hiding.
For sure.
I know, I got some great hidings, spectacular hidings. I guess 10 out of 10, if you would. One with a frying pan, with a slipper. But then, goodness me, I mean, I did push my parents' buttons. I don't remember those hidings. But, oh, brother, do I remember those times when the words which came out of my parents' mouth cut. To the very core. So, makes you think, huh?
No, it does. And, you know, so growing up like that, it was a very different environment. And, you know, when I hear people today who use the excuse that they had I had a terrible childhood. Oh, you would not believe the kind of childhood I had. And I become very distressed by that because everything around my childhood was absolutely unconventional. By today's standards would have been called so many forms of child abuse or child neglect or all these kinds of things. But what it did do was formulate who I am and who I became. My mental resiliency, my persistence, and let me tell you something, those are 2 exceptional character traits.
So what you're saying is though, even though the circumstances were quite extreme at times, the adversity definitely brought with it its own unique opportunities. Is that right?
For sure. I mean, there is no way that I would have been able to continue on through my adult life and actually achieve the things that I've wanted to achieve and I'm still going to achieve if I hadn't have had those experiences that molded me. And this is why I'm so absolutely adamant around women understanding what it is that they want, the fact that they are allowed to want things.
Allowed to want things. Women are allowed to want things. I do like that. And when we return, we are going to be digging into a bit more of your story and then this new program that you've created exclusively for women called By Invitation Only.
Rocking the airwaves.
Mix 93.8 FM.
Well, it certainly is true. The biggest thing is balance and restoring the balance. And I guess that really is the focus of tonight's show. Because wherever balance has disappeared out of your life, it will be restored.
Oh, for sure.
It will either be restored by yourself or by a massively and very significant event, but it will be restored, because the thing is, everything in this universe is in a state of balance. And I think what I just loved so much recently when we were chatting with Dr. John DeMartini was when he spoke about the fact that with the moment you establish or create a huge goal for yourself, it is immediately counterbalanced by the equivalent-sized phobia. And how true isn't that? And what a beautiful way he teaches that, because how many people don't you know who set these really big goals, and then the moment things get real, if you will, around the goal, they just run for cover because it just gets too hot in the kitchen. And it was just so wonderful to have him teach that in such a simple way, that for whatever it is that you want, that huge goal, desire, dream, whatever it is, will be counterbalanced by the equivalent-sized phobia, fear, adversity, challenge, because everything in this universe is balanced. I loved that.
Well, if you think about it, really, you know, here we are sitting tonight on Mix FM. Sitting here, we've got Kedzai with us. We're having a chat about history, life, balance. And when you think about it, I mean, how wonderful to be able to sit here as a co-presenter and say, you know, you're listening to Chris and Suzanne Stiles on Mix 93.8 FM. Mm. I mean, it's a wonderful place to be able to share with a community how everybody goes through traumatic, difficult, sad, trying times.
Exasperating times.
Absolutely, because we're all human. Mm. Not one of us, I mean, every single one of us is going through a journey, and that is for sure.
Well, what I really loved is last week we had the Against All Odds TV crew here live in studio with us, and they were filming the show. They were actually profiling Suzanne, and her story goes on Against All Odds either this week or in about 2 weeks' time. And what was so refreshing was to actually have the cameraman and the producer and the team just say the reason we were so excited to come and profile Suzanne is because she's actually told her story completely honestly. And that's the thing, when things went belly up for us, went belly up for you and taught you some of the biggest life lessons. In fact, I would go so far as to say they're way bigger than life lessons. They're universal lessons, because you really learned those literally on a soul level, on a cellular level, is the fact that you told it all. You told it true. And you said it the way it was. You've made millions. You've lost millions. You're coming back. You're really coming back with a bang. You know, some people are enjoying it. Others aren't. Who actually gives a darn? The truth of the matter is, you have never allowed what's going on around you to crush you. You've somehow found the ability to keep going, and you really have cultivated the habit of persistence. Now, that's actually something I'd like to dig into now, because moving beyond the paper rounds, moving a little more into your story, so much of your story just revolves around one simple word, persistence. And I think now's the time on tonight's show to actually begin to share what it is that you had to do, where you had to persist in order to win, and then subsequently the lessons that you had to learn around the fact that you really do matter too.
Well, it's a very interesting thing. You talk about telling it all, telling it quick. And one of the things I realized, I probably think in my early 30s, was it's better to actually just own up about stuff. It's always easier to have the skeletons hanging outside on the windowsill and not hiding them away in a closet, thinking that you know, nobody's ever going to find out about your mistakes. And the thing is somebody always finds out. Somebody's always got something to say. And then everybody will add on and embellish. So in my 30s, I actually realized that from then all, it was all going to be about, if you don't want to hear the answer, don't ask the question. And that was really where I decided to live the rest of my life around tell it all, tell it quick, tell it true. And if you want to hear what I did, if you want to know if I've done something, you ask me, and best you hope that you get to see the lesson. Now, I came to South Africa when I was 15. My mother and my stepdad emigrated to South Africa and I had to come out. And I was absolutely adamant that I'd be returning in about 6 or 7 months to go and join the Women's Royal Air Force in the UK. In fact, I wanted to study air traffic control, of all things. But growing up around Air Force bases and with my dad's himself still being in the UK and working for the defence around aircraft, it's always been in my blood. And something just happened when I got here. I mean, the immediate relief for me was the fact that when we were housed, my stepdad came out to do a contract with Arms Corps. We were immediately housed in very pleasant accommodation, and we had a helper, which meant that suddenly I wasn't the cook and the cleaner and the washer and the ironer and the bed maker. And so a huge weight was initially lifted off my shoulders, and I got the opportunity to really be around the big outdoors, which is something that you don't really have in England. You don't have those big open spaces. And I just loved the people. And you know, it was a very different time for me because obviously I grew up in the UK. So coming to a country that had segregation and apartheid and was going through its beginning stages of thinking about democracy, the yes or the no vote and all these kinds of things. So it was quite an interesting time to arrive in South Africa and be confronted with all these ideals. But I realized that I just couldn't stay with my mum anymore. It was becoming increasingly difficult for me. My half-brother was becoming increasingly difficult because he found it very hard to fit in here in South Africa, and he was finding difficulties himself. And I was at an age when I was 17 of just not being able to take it anymore. So the first thing I did as my one fierce act of rebellion was I dropped out of school. I told my mother I'd had enough. She got me doing subjects in school that I didn't want to do, and that gave her a huge element of control over me. It was subjects that I also wasn't particularly good at, and it made it very, very difficult. So I then got myself a job and was pretty good at it, and decided that I liked my little taste of freedom. So I did what every rather headstrong, foolish, young 17-year-old girl does. Of course, you don't realize you're doing this at the time. But found my Prince Charming, got pregnant, got married, had two sons, got divorced. But of course, I didn't have matric. So, you know, when I got married, it was stars in the eyes, happily ever after. And then kind of realizing 8 years down the line, I was too young, he was too young. We really didn't have the things in common that we thought we had. And being a then single mom of two boys, having my daughter a little while after my divorce, and realizing, oh my word, how am I going to pay bills? How am I going to do things? I'm not qualified. I'd done an interior design course and I was pretty good at it, but the economy wasn't brilliant. So that was quite difficult at the time. And then it was all around, well, how am I going to survive? So I sold Tupperware and watches. I learned how to make chocolates. I baked cakes for parties. This is all the while whilst working. When I was pregnant with my daughter, I lost a contract, so I worked in a restaurant and I did shift work and then baked jams and cakes and sold Tupperware and jewellery, and I sold everything except for AMC Classic Pots.
Just interesting, the words that you used just a few seconds ago were, how am I going to survive? So your mindset was one of survival. It was most certainly not one of thriving.
No, it certainly is not when I was pregnant with my daughter. Certainly not when I was first divorced. It was all about survival. So, it meant paying the rent.
So what brought the change? Because most of your young life, you were taking care of other people. So Suzanne never mattered. Therefore, if you will, your brand became massively discounted in the favor of everybody else. You then got married, children, again, found yourself in a very difficult set of circumstances, divorced, children to look after, etc., etc., etc. You don't have a metric. The word that's going through your mind is survival. So once again, it's almost as if, well, how you've got to put yourself, discount your brand, put everybody ahead of you, etc., etc., which is what, and the reason I'm harping on this is because this is what happens with so many women, so many moms, massively competent women, degreed women who are sitting at home looking after families. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but the thing is, are they truly fulfilled? Well, I don't know. It all depends on what their values are. But the question and what I'm intrigued at is, or intrigued by, is when did this all begin to change? When did you begin to move from survive to thrive? What caused that massive transition? Because that's what you now do. And that's what you're going to be doing through By Invitation Only. You're teaching women how to thrive.
Well, I think it's actually a very interesting thing, because I found that it was always around how can I. It was never around I wouldn't be able to, it's not going to happen. It was that, sorry, just very interesting SMS came in. I actually lost my job. I lost my contract during pregnancy. Thank you for the person that asked me. What I actually realized was I'd always been able to make money, but my focus had been on how much money I needed, not how much money I wanted. So it was a very, very interesting thing for me was, how could I get more? That became the first thing. And I used to find it difficult to sell face to face. I could sell on the phone, I could talk to people, because in those days, no email or things. But I was a little bit nervous, even though I sold all these things, Tupperware, jewelry, made birthday cakes, but I was always in my comfort zone. I was always talking to women or moms or through people that I knew. So initially I went and got Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, and I read the book. And that was when I realized that if you are not selling, you're dying. You are selling yourself every time you open your mouth, which was also, I think, part of the realization of tell the truth, tell it all, tell it quick. There'll be people that don't want to do business with you because you're honest, and there'll be others that will really want to do business with you because you're honest. So from then on, it went on to books like Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. I had some Eckhart Tolle, Arya Mountain Dreamer, which was just a... Just that poem is what actually made me realize that I can survive. I could answer all those questions, and that's what I wanted to do. Then I found my niche in the advertising industry. I met a wonderful man who was my mentor, in the ad industry, who then decided to teach me unselfishly everything he knew. And I found that I was really good at this. And it became something I was passionate about. And this made me think about what Alan Ray said the other day, Obviously, being a funeral director is not this man's passion, but he could become passionate about that. And, that was the most difficult time of my life, to be able to balance having all these things, doing what I needed to do, and making more than just money to survive. I wanted to make money to thrive. When I looked at it, I had two young boys, and I had my daughter, and I had things that I needed to do and needed to pay, because regardless of whether I lost my job, regardless of where I had to work, the hours that I had to work, I always did what needed to be done. And I did that initially for my children, to make sure that I could do the things I needed to do so that I could pay the bills I needed to pay. When I got into the ad industry and working in the corporate environment, I realized this was something that I could pour passion into that would allow me to have more. And this really started out actually through a vision board, which at the time I didn't know what a vision board meant. And what I'd done is I was working in a little office, white walls, very sterile environment, and I put up a little blue pin board behind my desk and I pinned pictures onto it. pictures of places I'd like to visit, pictures of a car that I'd like to drive one day. But I didn't really see it like that. It was just like, oh, that's a nice car, Mercedes-Benz, I like Mercedes. That's a nice place to visit, I'd always love to go to Paris. This is a piece of jewelry that I think is beautiful. And really it was just to decorate this board. And over the next 2 to 3 years, I actually started to acquire things off that board, which I hadn't really noticed myself until a friend of mine came with me. I was hosting our corporate box with the rugby. We were parking at my offices, and she looked at my notice board and she said to me, wow, the only thing you don't have on here, or that you haven't done on here, is you haven't been to Arniston. And I looked at it and I thought, my goodness me, isn't that the truth? But it still didn't occur to me what I was doing, but I'd started to focus on the things that I wanted instead of just focusing on paying the bills.
I see. Big shift in thinking.
For sure.
I guess your circumstances might not have changed that much, but what was happening is your mind was beginning to swing.
My mind was beginning to swing, and I was starting to realize that it really initially started off about wanting things for my children, though. I wanted to be able to buy a house. I wanted to be able to get them into reasonable schools at the time. I mean, I wasn't even thinking private schools then. I was still in the corporate world. I was thinking about just being able to take them on a holiday, being able to buy them nice things for Christmas. But still very much so, it was all about them, not so much all about me, or even anything about me at that time.
So now, why is by invitation only so important to you? What was going through your head when you came up with the idea, and where is it that you want to take by invitation only? In other words, what is the relevance? Because we've heard quite a lot of your story tonight. Obviously, there's a lot more to it, but we also only have an hour on the show. And if you think about women and the fact that when we opened up the show, it was around encouraging women to really get clear on what they want and to really also restore the balance, if you will. Yeah, that is if the balance is out of kilter, around the fact that it's not just only about everyone else, it's also about them. And this is a result of a lot of experiences that we're having lately with women who are just becoming so bitter and twisted because they've actually put everyone ahead of themselves, and then they've suddenly found later on in life that they don't know who they are, and there's a huge amount of frustration, anger and resentment that goes with that. So given that opening, why is by invitation only so important to you, and what will it do for women?
Well, for some time now, I've actually used the poem by invitation only at quite a few talks to women around what it takes to be an entrepreneur, what it takes to be a success in life, what it takes to have balance in life, what it takes to just become happy. And I'd like to just read the first two paragraphs of the poem. It says, "It doesn't interest me what you do for a living. I want to know what you ache for. And if you dare to dream of meeting your heart's longing, it doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you will risk looking like a fool for love, for your dream, for the adventure of being alive." And this was the thing for me, is that so many times dreams, goals, desires are put on hold because we believe it's our duty as a woman to put ourselves second. This is not about discounting family. This is not about women going out and not having kids and all these kind of things. It's just around having the balance. Now, with the ladies that we've been working with and seeing the frustration and the resentment, having Dr. DeMartini in studio actually just re-emphasized how important it was for me to get by invitation only going. And between having Dr. DeMartini in the day before my birthday and then the day after my birthday, getting permission from Araya Mountain Dreamer to say, yes, use my poem in the printed material, I knew that it was really time. Because we are actually going to start teaching women that it is all about balance. We're going to be telling them that they can find their unique power source, their values, their drivers, those things that they are not fulfilling against, that they are then finding the resistance and the frustration in. Because it's so important for me that Women who are in marriages stay in marriages but become happy and fulfilled. Women that are looking for a partner are looking for the partner for the right reasons and for not for them to give up everything that they want in order to fulfill against their partner's values. I mean, Dr. DeMartini just put it so beautifully well when he said, if you are not fulfilling against your own values, you will become angry, bitter, and resentful. We're going to be talking to women about setting purposeful goals that align with their unique power source, with their values. And for some women, it is family and children. So how do they fulfill in that area? How do they set purposeful goals for that? We're also going to be helping them to crush their success phobias. The minute somebody wants something, a very, very equal-sized phobia comes up. So if you want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, something the size of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro is going to be placed before you for you to get through so that the universe actually knows this is what you really want to do. We're going to be talking to them as well as about thinking for exceptional results because women spend their lives just being hugely influenced by outside factors, by what others think about or say about or do to them. And this causes them to be locked into what we call report card syndrome. We're going to be helping them to understand the absolute relevance of as within, so without. Because try as you might, you will never be able to succeed beyond your internal self-concept. It doesn't matter how badly you want to do something. If your internal self-concept is so small, you will never be bigger than that in any way. And then ultimately, it's discovering why it's imperative for women to understand and embrace the state of praxis. And what praxis really is it's when your beliefs and behaviors are perfectly aligned. I'll give you an example. That's like a smoker having a cigarette saying that when he's finished this cigarette, he's going to give up smoking or she's going to give up smoking. That's behavior is not aligned. If you're going to give up smoking, you wouldn't have picked up the cigarette to have a cigarette and say that at the same time. That's the same thing about bad-mouthing yourself. Yes, it's bad enough when you've got other people stabbing you in your back, but when you stab yourself in your own back, it's pretty desperate.
There's a piece that you wrote which I found most interesting. It says, I speak to many women and so many of them tell me what they're dying for. They're dying to be financially independent, or they're dying to be happy and content in a loving relationship, or they're dying to be in business for themselves, or they're dying to be in that high-paying, high-flying corporate job. I'm inviting you, and that's you, Suzanne, to them. I'm inviting you to move beyond what you're dying for so that you can truly connect with what it is that you're prepared to live for. That's pretty powerful.
Well, it was, and you know, that's the whole thing. I want women to start living for something. I've known exactly what it's like to be humiliated, to be downtrodden, to be sneered at, to be looked down people's noses by. And I think one of the things I find the hardest to believe and the hardest to come to terms with, why everybody was so distressed about me losing all my money. Because actually, whose money was it? It was my money. I worked for it. I earned it. I spent it a lot of times on other people, never investing it in myself, spending it on myself. So the universe gave me a nice big snot club and said to me, right, you know how to make millions of rands, hundreds of millions of rands. Now I'm going to make you learn how to do it all over again, but I'm going to make you do it when you understand that I am worth it, that I'm worth the money. And it was a very hard lesson, and it was so difficult for me. I mean, Anil Gupta, who very delightfully gave me 2 hours of his time on a Skype session, who said to me, you know, when did I decide to feel so betrayed by these other people? And I was raging inside at the time. I was so distressed. And I said to him, I think that's such an unfair statement. I never decided to feel so betrayed. He said, of course you did. Whose money was it?
Well, there you have it. By invitation only, Brett, thank you very much for your interaction tonight on social media. Do appreciate the SMSs. And By Invitation Only is going to launch on the 5th of November. Is that correct?
5th of November. We're going to be hosting it at a beautiful, beautiful venue called Bell Gables in Mulder's Drift. We can only take 70 women. The whole idea is for this to be intimate, to be in an opulent, beautiful environment, resourceful. It's in a farm environment, and it's just an incredible, incredible opportunity for women to start understanding a little bit more about themselves.
Well, fantastic. It's a great journey. Journeying within is the most important journey of your entire life. It may be the toughest, but it's certainly going to deliver fantastic results. And there we go. It's been a fantastic show tonight. Once again, to Kudziah, producer, thank you so much. Our shows are podcast. They go out on the successshow.podbean.com. That's where you'll be able to pick up tonight's show. And there are also many other shows in there, fantastic interviews, fantastic lessons that have been taught around success. Do have a good week, and whatever you do, make sure that you are constantly and always thinking into results and acting for results. That way, you're certainly guaranteed. Bye-bye.
Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, then listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Stiles every Tuesday night at 7:15.